Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we'll share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, words to live by, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. While most people know that Ronald Reagan was an actor, many forget that he began as a sports announcer. He spent 4 years at WHO in Des Moines, Iowa, and he said they were among the most pleasant of his life. At age 22, he believed he had achieved his dream. His salary? $75 a week. And he had enough money to help his parents, whose financial circumstances had gone from bad to worse because Jack had heart troubles that left him unable to work. During those 4 years in Des Moines, he attended an endless number of football games, auto races, track tournaments, and swimming meets. And through the magic of radio, hundreds of Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox games, which he broadcast from the studio in Des Moines. In the press box at Wrigley Field, or wherever the team played, a telegrapher tapped out a report in Morse code following each pitch and each play in the game. Then Ronald Reagan sat at a microphone in the studio across from another telegraph operator with a pair of earphones wrapped around his head. After each play, he decoded a burst of dots and dashes from the stadium and typed out a few words describing the play and handed it to Reagan through a slot in the sheet of glass between them. His job then was to describe the play as if he'd been in the press box. Even if the slip of paper would only say out or 4-3, you know, 4 was second base, 3 was first, so it was a grounder to second baseman who threw the batter out at first. Well, it had to be done quickly because WHO wasn't the only station covering the game. Can you imagine how difficult that had to be? Well, let's listen to the president tell the story.
One summer's day, my imagination was tested to its maximum. The Cubs and the St. Louis Cardinals were locked in a scoreless ninth-inning tie. Dizzy Dean was on the mound, and the Cubs' Billy Jurgis was at bat. I described Dean winding up and releasing his pitch. Then Curly, our telegraph operator, shook his head and passed me a slip of paper which said, "The wire's gone dead." Well, since I had the ball on the way to the plate, I had to get it there. I could have told our listeners the wire was dead, but it would have sent them rushing to their dials and to a competing station. So I decided to let Jurgis foul off the pitch, figuring Western Union would soon fix the problem. To fill in the dead time, I described a couple of kids in the stands fighting over the foul ball. When Curly gestured that the wire was still dead, I had Jurgis foul off another ball. I slowed Dean down, had him pick up the rosin bag and take a sign, shake it off, get another sign, and let him pitch. I said he'd fouled it off another one, but this time he'd just missed a home run by only a few inches. I searched Curly's face for a look of encouragement, but he shook his head. I described Dean winding up and hurling another pitch. Jurgis hit a foul ball, and then another, and another. A red-headed kid in the stands retrieved one of the fouls and held up the ball to show off his trophy. By then, I was in much too deep to admit the wire was dead, so I continued to let Jurgis foul Dean's pitches, and his string of foul balls went on for almost 7 minutes. I'm told someone reported his foul slugging spree as a record to Ripley's Believe It or Not column. Finally, Curly started typing again, and I suspected the wire had been restored. Relieved, I grabbed the slip of paper he handed me through the slot and read it. Jurgis popped out on the first ball pitched. For days, people stopped me on the street and asked if Jurgis had set a record for foul balls. I'd just say, yeah, he was there a long time. I never admitted a thing.
More from President Reagan after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles, individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
As a kid, Ronald Reagan couldn't play baseball very well because with his poor eyesight, he said the ball was just too small. But in 1952, Ronald Reagan got his one and only chance to play the lead in a sports movie portraying the troubled baseball superstar Grover Cleveland Alexander in a movie called The Winning Team. In order to be convincing, Reagan spent 2 hours a day with pitcher Bob Lemon of the Cleveland Indians, learning the difference between throwing from the mound and just throwing. Almost 30 years later, he was able to invite the Baseball Hall of Famers to the White House, and his remarks were classic. You'll also hear the excerpt conclude with a wonderful story from former Commissioner of Baseball, Bowie Kuhn. Let's listen.
I'm delighted to, well, I can't tell you how thrilled to have you all here. And over there at the other table is a ball player who's delighted to be here. Vice President George Bush, and he did play. But I want to tell you, you span the years for me, and you've, and all these young gentlemen here are growing up as ball players. It's a delight to have all of you here. The nostalgia is bubbling within me, and I may have to be dragged out of here because of all the stories that are coming up in my mind. Baseball, I had to finally confess over here, no, I didn't play when I was young. I went down the football path. But I did play in a way, as Bob Lemon well knows. I was old Alex, Grover Cleveland Alexander. I've been very, very proud of that. It was a wonderful experience. There were quite a few ball players, including Bob Lemon, who were on the set for that picture. And I remember one day when they wanted some shots of me pitching, but kind of close up. So they wanted me to throw past the camera, and they had a fella back there. Well, Al Lyons, one of the ball players that was there, who was going to catch the ball back there and then toss it back over the camera to me. And the camera was getting these close shots for use wherever they could use them. And he was on one side of the camera. And my control wasn't all that it should be at one point, and I threw it on the other side of the camera. And he speared it with his left hand, but no glove on. He was a left-hander. And after he brought the ball to me, and he said, "Alex, I'm sorry I had to catch your blazer barehanded." He didn't suffer any pain, I assure you. But I remember we had a fellow that I'm sure some of you know and remember, Metkovich. And Metkovich, during the day's shooting, would memorize everyone's lines. And then if we were on location and get in a bus to go back in from location, he would now play all the scenes for us on the bus. So, thinking about this, one day on the process screen, an umpire behind him, he was at the plate, and they wanted a shot of a ball player at the plate. And the director said, "There's no lines, but you know what to say." He said, "The umpire is going to call it a strike." And he said, "You don't think it's a strike, so do what you do in a ball game when you think it's a bad call." And extroverted Metkovich, who was so happy to play all the scenes, standing up at the plate, and if you look closely, you could see that the bat was beginning to shake a little bit. And the ball came by, and an actor playing the umpire bawled out, "Strike one." And Metkovich lowered the bat, and he says, "Gee, that was no strike." Picture wasn't a comedy, so we couldn't leave it in. But you know, I've always been sorry about one thing. Alex is in the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. Everyone knows that great 1926 World Series. He had won 2 games, received the greatest ovation anyone's ever received, and then was called on in the 7th inning with the bases loaded, no one out, and one of the most dangerous hitters in baseball at the plate. And he came in and save the game. The tragedy that I've always regretted is that the studio was unwilling to reveal in the picture, was afraid to reveal what I think was the best kept secret in sports. A bad habit of Alex's was widely heralded and took something away from his luster. But they wouldn't let us use the actual word of what was behind maybe his bad habit. Alex was an epileptic. And when he was arrested and picked up for being drunk in the gutter as he once was, he wasn't at all. But he would rather take that than admit to the disease that plagued him all his life. But he also, early in his baseball career, was hit in the head, going from first base down to second. On a throw from second, they caught him right in the head. And he was out of baseball for a while, and they didn't know whether forever, because he had double vision. And he kept experimenting, trying to find out if there wasn't some way that he could pitch. And he went to a minor league club and asked for a tryout, and the manager got up at the plate and said, "We want him on the mound and throw me a few." Alex broke three of his ribs on the first pitch. His experiment had been that he thought if he closed one eye and threw, he'd only see. And the friend that was with him when they were thrown out of the ballpark said, "What happened?" And he said, "I closed the wrong eye." But there are men in this room that were playing when I was broadcasting. And I promised to say something here to a great Cub fan that we have at the table. And that it would make him feel good. I was broadcasting the Cubs when the only mathematical possibility, and Billy Herman will remember this very well, that the Cubs had of winning the pennant was to win the last 21 games of the season. And they did. And I was so imbued with baseball by that time that I know you're not supposed to talk about a no-hitter while it's going on because you'll jinx them. So there I was, a broadcaster, and never mentioned once in the 21 games, and I was getting as uptight as they were, never mentioned the fact that they were at 16, they were at 17, and that they hadn't lost a game, because I was afraid I'd jinx them. But anyway, they did it, and it's still in the record books. I can't take any more time doing this, or we'd be here all day. Commissioner, come on up here.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to take a moment on behalf of all of us gathered here together to thank the President for his great kindness in having us all here today. I want to just do one little thing that I found. I want to say to the President on behalf of baseball that I think we have contributed mightily to the President's situation here in Washington, because he was a Cubs fan, as you can tell. And I've got an article I found in the Chicago Tribune which plainly indicates that baseball has prepared him for his career here. It says, "For 4 years, Ronald Reagan broadcast games of the Cubs and in the process became that rarest of nature's noblemen, Dave Broder, a Cub fan. Nothing before or since those 4 years has prepared him more fully to face with fortitude the travails of the Oval Office. As a Cub fan, he learned that virtue will not necessarily prevail over chicanery, that swift failure follows closely on the heels of even the most modest success, that the world mocks those who are pure in heart but slow of foot. But, and here's the good news, Mr. President, but that the bitterest disappointment will soon yield to the hope and promise of a new season." So. We thank you from the bottoms of our heart for your kindness and generosity here today.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores, and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast, featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.